This is Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. This week, Eric Kirk and Chuck Rogers will be hosting. As always, we welcome your contributions. Please give us a call at 826-4805 if you're out of the area at 800-640-5911 and to our text line at 492-KHSU. Here's Eric Kirk.
Thank you, Michael. And in the studio with me is Chuck Rogers.
We're going
to talk politics again tonight. We've got a few things that we're going to get to. But also on the line tonight, we have a special guest, Green Party leader Jill Stein. Are you there?
I am indeed. It's great to be with you, Eric and Chuck. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Obviously, we have a few things in the news to talk about. But why don't we talk about you're coming to Humboldt County soon, correct?
Yes, I am. I will be there on the 18th for the Humboldt County Cup and the Emerald Fair. And this is a very, you know, exciting celebration, really, of cannabis culture and more. And I'm really excited to be a part of it. You know, there'll be music and art, and I'm part of a so-called Green New Deal mini-conference where we're going to talk about how we really have a new way forward that could be very comprehensive and that could solve the climate crisis and our economic crisis and the endless wars all in one fell swoop as we green the economy and push back on climate change and make wars for oil obsolete.
All right. Chuck,
Dr. Stein, I was just going to ask, you said Green New Deal. Does that harken back to the big changes that happened during the Roosevelt era, except this is the green version of something like that?
Yes, exactly. And in fact, it's an emergency jobs program. So it builds on the New Deal of the Great Depression, you know, the New Deal that helped get us out of that.
Right.
And we still have, you know, although there's a mythology that the economic struggles are behind us, most Americans, they're actually not. You know, the stock market may have recovered, but everyday people, working people, have not. The jobs that came back, you know, are lousy, part-time, temporary, insecure. The costs of healthcare and, needless to say, education and housing have massively skyrocketed. Wages have stagnated. You know, the news just came out the other day. We got 3 billionaires in the United States that have as much money as the lower half of the population. So it ain't working for most people, and we badly need a transformative change, and that's what this New Deal does at the same time that it provides the green job. So it achieves basically 100% clean, renewable energy rapidly.
And part of the reason that people, particularly working people, are worse off is that we have, I believe in the 1970s, 4 in 10 jobs were in manufacturing. I think we're down to 1 in 10 now.
Right.
And so we're probably not going to be able to bring that back. It's a mechanization as well as exportation of jobs. But as I understand it, the Green Revolution is looking at maybe an alternative restructuring of the economy to create different types of livelihoods, right?
Exactly. And, you know, we have a national emergency on many fronts, but, you know, on climate alone, as you well know, with the fires recently in Northern California, you know, really drives home that we have a real crisis and we don't have much time. The clock is ticking. The Green New Deal basically calls for an emergency mobilization, really, at a wartime scale. It's like when Pearl Harbor was bombed, we didn't wait around and think, how are we going to solve this and debate it? You know, we recognized there was a national emergency, and we massively transformed the economy. It took 6 months to transform from, you know, basically a 0% of GDP to, like, 25% of GDP. A massive transformation that geared up for the war economy. We have a different kind of war we need to fight right now, and that's the war against climate change. So we can create the jobs in an intentional way like we did with the New Deal. But in this case, we're talking about sustainable jobs that bring justice to our communities as well as sustainability. So we look at jobs in clean renewable energy, in regenerative and sustainable agriculture, public transportation. And part of that also includes, you know, the cannabis and the hemp economy, which is part of, you know, what's helped Northern California and Humboldt County stay above water. And that would also be a critical part of this Green New Deal.
Well, Dr. Stein, I agree with everything you've said, but my question is, do you think that we have the political will nationally to get this done? And if so, that's good news. But if not, how do we make that happen?
Yes, exactly. And that's why I'm agreeing, you know, because it's happening. And, you know, just last week we saw Donna Brazil's revelations you know, that it was rigged. Yes, and Elizabeth Warren agreed, yes, it was rigged. And what exactly has been done about that? You know, nothing except a series of empty promises, including most recently the purging of the DNC once again. The Democratic National Committee got purged of the Sanders reformers, sort of been cajoled and promised, you know, to just kind of hang in there. But even now, you know, the two Democrats that got elected earlier this week to the governor's races, they were centrist Democrats. We don't
Although there was a bit of a groundswell of grassroots Democrats. I mean, they're not third party, but they definitely are not a lot typical of the Democratic Party, partly because they were asked to run on, and I think the Democratic Party didn't expect them to win.
That may very well be. And the problem is that at the grassroots, you know, the Democratic Party allows you know, the rebellion to take place, but the big money is still very firmly under corporate control. So the Democratic Party itself will not talk about the endless wars. They will not mention health care as a human right through a Medicare for All system. You know, if you listen to Tom Perez, the head of the DNC, in his commentary about the results of the election, you know, he was just as mealy-mouthed as ever and basically refuses to move things along and change the power. This struggle has gone on inside the Democratic Party for at least 60 years. You know, back in the 1960s, this battle was being fought in the time of the Civil Rights era. And, you know, and it didn't work then, and it hasn't worked since. And when you ask the question, how will we muster the political will, that's exactly the question to ask. And it's really important to look at why we have been so stuck. In my mind, so many things are falling apart now. And you know, it's not just in my mind. I think most people are feeling really up against the wall right now, whether it's the low-wage jobs or not having a job at all, or it's the co-optation of the cannabis economy, its corporatization, the skyrocketing cost of health care. You know, again, the Democrats are not seizing the moment. They've won on an anti-Trump platform, but remember, most Trump voters were not voting for him. They were voting against Hillary Clinton, who they liked even less.
Sure.
So you can't just have two bad choices out there. People stop coming out to vote, and then, you know, and then all bets are off about what kind of extremist, you know, candidates and policies take over when the bottom drops out of our democracy. You cannot simply go to the polls asking, who do I hate the most?
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, you mentioned in there, you know, about the political will and the fact that we've been stuck for so long. Completely agree, 100%. And, you know, the follow-up to that is, how do we push that car out of the mud? And what do we do? Because I think we all know that in some states, and certainly nationwide, people on the progressive end of things have had to move closer to the center in order to get elected. What do we do about that?
Yes. I think, you know, when did the Democrats start moving to the center? It was
Clinton.
Yes, exactly, because Clinton really embraced kind of the corporate fundraising strategy.
Right, that was his whole strategy.
He defined this center, not because it's popular. When they define that center, it's like the progressive heart died in the Democratic Party.
Well, and you know what he found there? What he found in the center was enough money to run nationwide. So
somehow
we have to figure out how progressives can run statewide and nationally and still be able to afford it without sacrificing their values, right?
And you know, in my experience, the critical thing is being heard because, you know, it's like, who voted for Trump? It was a lot of Sanders supporters, among other things, you know, who were denied a progressive option. And it's well known that, you know, the drivers of fascism, in fact, you know, generally come out of really stressed, economically beaten down populations that don't have a progressive option. So,
of course, the bigger problem was the people who just sat out the election altogether.
Yeah.
I think that those
because they didn't have a choice that was worth coming out for.
Right.
Most people not know that there was something else. And many of those Trump votes would not have gone to Trump had Sanders not been knocked out by the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
So we keep running around in this endless loop trying to reform a party that has long since sold out to corporate America. But what you see happening is when you actually get out in the communities at the grassroots level that you can win on a progressive platform and you don't have to sell out to the Democrats. In my view, it's really critical for us to build momentum as a political opposition because, you know, it's like fool me once, shame on you. Fool me 50 times, shame on me.
Now, I want to ask you, Doctor, about the election in Virginia. I mean, to me, the news wasn't that the governor won. I think the governor actually was very lucky to win because it wasn't a coattails. It was basically floating up. I think he would have lost if it wasn't for a number of campaigns that were run. A lot of people ran. We've seen apparently the first transgender person to win an election to win a legislative seat, although I've heard that she might actually be the second. But anyways, she took out a major homophobe who had actually authored the infamous bathroom legislation there, and a self-avowed socialist. I think a DSA member won. I think a number of people of color and women won. Granted, they ran on the Democratic ticket. Is that necessarily going to be in their way of actually trying to get something done now that they've got in these positions? I mean, I think they just basically used it to get into to where they're at. And do you think they'll be able to make a difference?
They will make a difference, but how much difference, you know, is the question. Who had more momentum and power and people behind him than Bernie Sanders? And he was slammed by, you know, by the corruption of the Democratic Party. So if they could stop Sanders, they can certainly stop, grassroots progressives. And it didn't begin with Sanders. The same thing with Kucinich. Before Kucinich, you know, it was Jesse Jackson, you know, and others in between, including Al Sharpton. So, you know, this is the game plan. This is how the Democrats work. They give you a little bit of rope, but then they've got the kill switch when you start actually challenging power. And my feeling is that we are kind of, you know, the ship is right up against the waterfall right now, and we cannot keep going as we've been going. We really need to challenge plan here because the climate is melting down. We got nuclear weapons, which are about to explode, starting on the Korean Peninsula, maybe in Ukraine, who knows where else. Costs of health care are just beyond the pale, and a generation is locked in student debt. In my view, this is about organizing, and it's about building from the grassroots and fighting at every level that we can. We just had a legislator defect from the Democrats and join the Greens in the state of Maine, where they passed ranked choice voting, which is a really important voting reform. It takes the fear out of voting. It allows you to actually put your values first and not sort of do a deal with the devil and vote for the lesser evil, hoping that somehow lesser evil will be good when it's not, and it hasn't been. But the Democrats are trying to sabotage it because they want you to be intimidated into voting for them. So they're trying to sabotage ranked choice voting, which was passed overwhelmingly by voter referendum in the state of Maine. And we had three legislators have quit the Democratic Party. One has come over and has joined the Greens. So, you know, I think we're in desperate times right now, and people are doing amazing and wonderful things. The rebellion is really picking up speed right now, and we need to keep doing it. And like in Humboldt County, where there are a lot of Greens in local office, you know, I think the rebellion needs to be brought into the voting booth, and it's really important not to live in denial, hoping that somehow after decades of this, the Democrats are going to let the people take the party back. They have managed not to allow that to happen. If you listen to what Tom Perez is saying, it's very clear he is not budging. The Democrats who are winning are the centrist Democrats, but it's the everyday people who are staying home because, you know, because they don't buy it. And you might be able to win a battle, but you're not going to win the war just by running against Trump. We have to run for what we're for.
So, Dr. Stein, if somebody wants to get involved, do you have some contact info, or how would they want to get involved with your efforts?
Great. So, for one thing, they can come to the Humboldt County Cup and the Emerald Fair on 18th, which is taking place at the Redwood Acres Fairgrounds, starting at 11 in the morning, going till 10 at night. Lots of music and art and food and displays and fun stuff. And I'll be there talking about the Green New Deal and the economy and the cannabis world that we could have that would work for us, etc. So people can come there. You can also, and by the way, that's on the web at HumboldtCountyCup.com. You can find out more. You can get tickets, et cetera. That's HumboldtCountyCup.com. You can also join up with the California Green Party, which is undergoing a huge revival right now. A lot of very discouraged Bernie supporters have now kind of gone green and are giving a whole new life to the Green Party. So there's exciting stuff happening there, and that is if you just Google Green Party of California. And then my website is jill2016.com, or social media is Dr. Jill Stein. That's D-R, no period, Jill Stein, all as one word, and you can tune in to all kinds of good stuff. I do a Facebook Live every Wednesday at 5 p.m. California time at that website and at that Facebook page, rather, Dr. Jill Stein. And that's a great way to join the team as well.
All right. One last thing. You mentioned Jill 2016. Is there going to be a Jill 2020? And feel free to make the announcement on this show right now.
Well, put it this way. You know, I describe myself as a mother on fire, you know. Until it gets better, I'm not going away. What exactly my job is going to be, I don't know. If I am called, I will come, whatever the job is. So, you know, we'll see.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Jill Stein, and we'll talk to you another time.
Thank you so much. Great talking with you, Eric and Chuck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, that was you're listening to KHSU. This is Thursday Night Talk. My name is Eric Kirk, guest Chuck Rogers. We just finished up with Dr. Jill Stein, Green Party leader, who will be in the Humboldt Cup, it is, at Redwood Acres.
A week from Saturday.
A week from Saturday. Yeah. So. All right. Well, Chuck, why don't we talk a little bit about, we talked with her a little bit about what happened on Tuesday night. You got a summary for me?
I do. And I agree with a lot of what she said. You know, as a practical matter, in the era of Trump, I was still gratified to see so many Democrats win.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I know that Ralph Northam in Virginia is more moderate than what I would like.
But at least he knows. He's got to be smart enough to know whom he owes this one, because he would have lost if it wasn't for this groundswell.
One of the counties that put him over the top, interestingly enough, had gone for Donald Trump by double digits. It's one of the counties that ring the D.C. area there in Northern Virginia, Fairfax and Prince William and Loudoun. Loudoun County, a couple of people have said, was the revenge of the suburbs. They went heavily for Trump. in 2016 and then went for Northam against Gillespie by double digits, by 20 points, I think it was, this time. So, you know, there have been several commentators who've tried to take a look at this and figure out exactly what happened. Vice President, Biden said that his view, when you take into account what happened in Virginia and New Jersey, and also a progressive mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina, now St. Petersburg, Florida, and so on, he said it's just that people are just tired of the mood that Trump has foisted on us here, and they want something else.
But there also is a very specific organizational tactic that is sort of like three different organizations came in at once. There's Indivisible, which, by the way, there are Indivisible chapters
here
in Humboldt County. There was Clinton's there was a break off from her campaign, the grassroots aspect, called Run for Something, which they were trying to raise, and a very similar campaign that broke off of the Sanders campaign, I think Bernie's Revolution or something like that. And those candidates, Bernie's people actually backed several of the candidates. As I mentioned, there is a self-defined socialist, a Marine, who defeated a very entrenched Republican. And Republicans have to be really concerned about this because they managed to gerrymander Virginia to the hilt. That means that all of the delegate, you know, the state legislature, as well as it is. I mean, I think in 2016 of the Virginia votes, there are 11 Congress representatives in Virginia. The Democrats won 54% of the vote, and they won four of the 11 districts. That's how badly that was gerrymandered.
And that's true in a lot of states. Texas is another one. Yeah,
Texas.
There's a lot of gerrymandered states.
And Georgia. And I think the only state that's really gerrymandered in favor of Democrats is Maryland. And but at any rate, this wave that happened, I think there was like a 32 or something delegate difference. I think they've got 100 delegates, as they call them, as their legislative assembly. And we know that 15 there were 15 flips from Democrat to Republican. So now it's like 51 to 49. But there are four elections which the Republicans came out narrowly ahead that are in recounts, so that within 100 or 200 votes. And so it could flip, and that's huge because the Democrats have never had more than a four delegate gain in any election. And I think it's because of this organization that they brought in money, they brought in a lot of grassroots effort, and they ran candidates. Only 29 candidates they ran last time around, so had no chance of winning the taking over the delegation. At this point, they ran 90. And, of course, they didn't win in all of them, but as Dennis Huber, local activist, used to say, if you're not on the ballot, you know you're not going to win.
That's for sure.
And so we've got, you know, conservatives who are taken out, and I'm forgetting the name of the transgender woman, but Donilla something, but she didn't win it on that issue, even though that was what inspired her to run. She won it on infrastructure, road building, education.
Things that are actually important to people.
And where the Republicans have to be concerned is their culture war didn't play off this well.
No, it did not. And Virginia is a great example. That Ed Gillespie ran on the Trump culture wars, you know, the Confederate monuments and so on, the Trump culture and social issues, without bringing Trump into the state. So he was trying to walk that line there. But
he did get a robocall from Trump.
He did get a robocall from Trump. But he was squarely in the area of cultural and social issues, and he lost.
He did.
He was by a huge amount.
And it was something like 60% of the voters that were there opposed the taking down of the Confederate monuments, but they didn't let that be the deciding issue for them. Healthcare.
It turned out that wasn't their priority.
Right.
And that's a big lesson. And you know what? Here's something else that's interesting about Tuesday. A lot of Republicans have been writing and saying over the last couple of days that they're actually relieved that this happened. Steve Schmidt, for example, who was John McCain's campaign chairman and involved in a lot of other races as well all over the country, said that he was glad that this happened, and he called it a coalition of the decent who came out in big numbers, by Democrats and independents and moderate Republicans, and made this happen. So, you know, it's definitely a backlash. Here's the thing, though. This momentum has to carry for a whole year. This has to happen again in 2018 for there to be big changes to happen.
Sure. Yeah.
And if it doesn't, then, you know, we'll be, as Dr. Stein says, continue to be stuck.
But this model of organizing that these three organizations kind of simultaneously came together from separate areas, came together and did, is going to raise money off of these results.
Absolutely.
And so there is a chance that this is going to happen. I mean, it's they're going to run everywhere. They're going to run in the red states. We know this. Obama ran the 50-state strategy.
In big numbers, in record numbers. Progressive candidates are signing up to run in numbers that we haven't seen in a long time. And let's not forget that the grassroots, as Dr. Stein was saying, and as you're alluding to here, the local, state, the county, the city, the town elections, that's how the Republicans got to where they are now.
Right.
They started this
in the
80s. With Newt Gingrich and, you know, as a reaction to Bill Clinton.
Right.
And maybe this is a similar reaction to Donald Trump and Mike Pence and Steve Bannon and so on and so forth. But that's how they did it.
It frustrated the gerrymandering because it's brought out people who don't typically vote.
Right.
And the gerrymandering was all based on the likely voters. Mm. And what happened in Virginia and some of the other places was not likely voters came out because they had something. Now, Trump has done a lot to help that, but they also put out candidates there. You look at the difference. I mean, of the 15 the Republicans we know have been released, they were all middle-aged to elderly white men.
Yep.
And now I think two-thirds of them are women. Something like half of them are people of color. Obviously, you know, a few other differences there. This is Virginia. This is not a radical place. It's not a totally red place, but it's also not a radical place. And a huge difference has been made, and I think it's going to make a huge difference. I know Dr. Stein is kind of focused on what party you're in.
Yeah.
I don't think that makes that make a difference.
No, well, most people are independents now anyway.
Exactly.
You know, fewer and fewer people are identifying by one party or the other. Right. Something else to point out about Tuesday, and this is really good news. I've been reporting on this for years. People under 35 voted actually in heavy numbers, and that is some of the best news that I've heard politically in a long time.
They're not in the likely voter categories.
No, and they're not Republicans.
Blows up the whole...
They're not conservative.
Yeah.
They are people who are looking to the future and not the past, and that's a very good sign. Now, they need to do that in 2018, and 2018 is important for something you were just mentioning, and that's gerrymandering, because the next redistricting, the redrawing of the lines is after the 2020 census.
Right.
And so whoever is in control of politics in 2020 at the end of that census is going to get to redraw those districts.
That's why these two governors' races were so important.
That's exactly why they were so important.
Yeah.
And so the same people who turned out in heavy numbers on Tuesday in the places that had elections, those same demographics, including those people under 35, need to turn out next November.
All right, let me invite callers here if they want to join. This is KHSU. Chuck Rogers and I are talking politics on Thursday Night Talk. If you want to join the conversation, 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. That's 826-4805. Or if you're out of the area, 800-640-5911. We're talking the politics of the day, which was a really important election. You know how important it was because Fox News, which was going to cover the whole thing, they cut out. They announced it, and then they left it, and they started talking about Clinton's emails.
Well, let's talk about Hillary.
It was amazing.
It's not new. I mean,
Tucker Carlson was like maudlin in his reaction to it, and Sean Hannity looked like he was shell-shocked, and because they're going to say, okay, these were blue areas, but they weren't on the micro level. They were on the statewide level, but these were red areas within Virginia that blue delegates, blue people won for delegates, and maybe not even blue, maybe even some green.
Yeah,
they're
right,
in there. They might have D's in front of their names, but these are not typical career politicians or even people that have won voices. There was one woman who her brother died due to mental illness that she feels was not adequately addressed. That's her issue. Mm-hmm. And she's going in there for the reform. But a lot of things happen around the country, too. I don't want to focus exclusively on Virginia. We saw a Sikh man got elected in Hoboken, even though there was a whole anti-terror stupid thing against him. Yeah. Possibly really good news, too, is in Maine, the voters by 60% passed the first popular vote expansion of Medicaid.
Which their governor is completely opposed to.
He's been fighting. He's opposed to. I'm calling him the dumbest governor in office right now.
LePage.
He also just made some statement today about how Black and Latinos are the enemies of the state right now because they're shooting at cops. He's losing. He's like worse than Trump on this stuff. Mm-hmm. How he keeps getting reelected, I don't know. I think his days are numbered. But
yeah, let's hope.
I think so. Dr. Stein mentioned some other things that are happening in Maine, so there might be a grassroots upheaval there. Minneapolis, somebody won. Some new people won. Washington State, their legislature flipped over to the Democrats, so now we have what they're calling the Blue Wall,
the Western Blue Wall from
on the coast from borders of Canada and Mexico. It's solid blue state governments all the way up there now,
and that's going to continue.
It's going to continue. It's probably going to deepen in its blue because the Republicans here are all but hapless at this point.
They have San Diego.
They have
North
San Diego
County.
and the Valley.
Yeah,
that's
right.
It. So, anyway, we can continue to talk about that. Do you have any other election stuff you want to talk about?
Well, I think there's so many important things. Here's something that's kind of flying under the radar, and sometimes we like to talk about things that people can look for. You know, going down the road, you mentioned Fox News. There was some reporting in some of my industry journals and websites yesterday and today that there are people inside of Fox News now who are beginning to grouse that they're even worried that their future credibility is at stake. A lot of – for what you were just talking, that they walk away from the biggest election that we're having right now before 2018 and we'll want to talk about Hillary Clinton again. So we need to keep an eye on what's going on there. We don't know what's going to happen.
We don't
there.
Know. You know, the Fox News also censored that television ad that
yes,
millionaire
Tom,
guy,
Tom Steyer.
Yeah, who's been calling for impeachment with these things. And
that
guess
was a $10 million ad buy. By the way, he's a billionaire from NextGen, but he spent $10 million of his own money to get those ads on.
And
I think it's interesting that Fox pulled him.
It is, they've got their problems because, of course, they're sort of disproportionately being hit with all of these revelations of harassment and assault on women. And I noticed Megyn Kelly, she's had kind of a makeover. She's wanting to look different. She almost looks like Murphy Brown, Candace Bergen, with her new approach. I think she's actually. I wonder if she was politically impacted by that because she interviewed the woman who flipped off the motor.
The bicycle rider
who got fired from her job, but now she's been offered almost 500,000 jobs across the country. She's set. I mean, you get to put that on your resume, I guess. But I watched the interview, and Megyn Kelly, there's a difference. I've always thought she was actually one of the more brilliant of the conservative.
She is. She's an attorney, actually.
And the rest, but she used to really anger me. She hasn't angered me in a long time, even when I disagree with her. The arrogance isn't there.
Well, you know, some of that is how Fox is run, and I don't even call it Fox News because it isn't. Not only Megyn Kelly, but the whole roster of people at Fox when she was at Fox, they were given talking points.
Yeah.
At the beginning of every day, you know, you will not cover this, you will cover this, and here's how it will be covered. That's not news.
Yeah.
That's just being the PR wing of the Republican Party. That's
not
journalism.
But when she was
journalism.
Attacked by Trump, her days there were probably numbered.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that was there. And that was just her trying to be a journalist, right? Ask her
tough
question.
Imagine that. What a concept, huh?
Anyway, but she did this. Apparently, this thing went viral and it's like an image, and it does show that there is a deep division in this country. But I do wonder if this election and a few other things mean it's kind of it's turning around now. You know, we have Donald Trump in the East right now. He's getting basically a royal carpet treatment in China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is. I would direct people to kind of his convoluted statement while he was over there, too, trying to sound tough on China, but blame it on our past presidents.
Right.
And so on. It was bizarre.
Because he wants Chinese cooperation with regard to North Korea and the rest. He's not eating their food. That came out in a news thing. He's not eating Asian food.
Hamburgers.
He's getting burgers. Just like when he went to Saudi Arabia, he demanded that they give him steak and ketchup as a backup
in case he didn't
like their lamb, and the recipe, you know. But and then it brought out these stories of him trying to get the White House cooking staff to mimic a Big Mac or something, and when it didn't come out perfectly, he sent out his Secret Service people to get him a real hamburger. It's just
statesmanlike,
And he shouldn't. It sounds trivial, but it's not, because the provincialism. He can't come out of it. He can't be a statesman.
No. I mean,
just
he's not going to.
Noodles or something.
He's not going to change. He's set in his ways. He is who he is. And, you know, the people who voted for him thinking, well, once he gets into the White House, it's going to be different. No.
No.
It's not going to happen. And, you know, here's something else that you know, is on people's minds right now is what happens to Trump with this Russia thing and with some of the changes in politics now, especially with 2018 coming up. Does he remain in office? Does he complete a full term? And there are a couple of schools of thought from our side on that, actually. Be careful what you wish for, because Mike Pence actually has a far-right agenda that's heavy on social and cultural issues. But he also he was once a congressman. He's been a governor. He knows how to talk politically to sound reasonable.
But wasn't he the one who brought Manafort in? Or maybe I'm wrong. Or Flynn?
No, you know, here's the interesting thing about Manafort. Manafort asked to come in.
Yeah.
And that's part of what's going on in the Russia investigation. He offered to come in and offered to come in for no pay.
Yeah.
And then guaranteed some of his Russian handlers that he could get personal updates on the campaign.
And he ended up being that. I mean, that would be like – I mean, and plenty of people around here, some of the people listening know that, you know, if I'm growing marijuana illegally, I'm not going to run for office, or I'm not going to take on this kind of campaign because it's going to draw attention. What did he think? That was, you know, did he not think that this stuff was going to come out? Because it looks like unless Mueller's charges are just totally outlandish, it looks like he was in, you know, up to his neck.
Yeah, maybe $60 million or so. And heavily involved with Cypriot bank
nobody would notice that?
Well,
and what about Trump's vetting? I mean, what happened?
None. There was none. Well, and look how many positions have not even been filled.
Yeah.
The State Department has been gutted. He's trying. Yeah. I mean, the EPA now is just a joke.
And he's got no expert on Africa, which some people speculate
might be the reason those four Green Berets
are dead. Yeah.
Right. Didn't have the intelligence they needed when they were going out on that patrol.
Yeah. It's
talk about a Benghazi for Trump, huh?
Yeah.
Where's the investigation on that? The Republicans were 11 investigations of Benghazi, I believe it was.
Right.
What's going to be done about this?
No, it's not even on the radar. And it's just apparently the Democrats and the Republicans are going their separate ways in the Senate investigation.
Right.
I don't even know what's happening with the House investigation. That's kind of a joke. But
one of the House chairmen who recused himself has now come back and is now sending subpoenas out on his own.
On his own.
Is that valid?
Legal. Yeah,
I know.
There's nothing specific about it, but but you're supposed to have at least the way the parliamentary rules work. You're supposed to have a committee do it, not just send out subpoenas on your own as a lone person. If he can do it, I think there's going to be lone representatives doing it all the time from here on in, who pays for it.
And we'll see if this kind of thing continues. I mean, if I were a Republican, which would never happen. But if I were a Republican in Congress, I would be looking at these election results, not just the results, but I would be digging down layer by layer by layer into all the statistics, yeah, and probably finding out that it's not going to be good to stay attached to Donald Trump and his policies, no, if you want to stay in office. So some of this may change. I don't know.
I don't know.
And that may just be overly optimistic on my part.
ACA?
I don't know.
Will they stop trying to repeal ACA? Will they? Probably is an excuse to say, oh, we just can't get it done.
And what happens to tax reform?
What happens to tax reform now? Because this was, you know, a kind of working class. This was the white working class went 50-50.
Right.
You know, whereas it was something like something ridiculous, like 65-35, mm-hmm, in the last election in Virginia. They broke even on white people without a high school education, right, a college education. Mm-hmm. They broke even. A lot of that was women. There were more women than men, but still, mm-hmm, it was it's something that they've got to be worried about. And yeah, are they really going to push to eliminate the state income tax deduction or the mortgage interest deduction, yeah, or the student loan deduction? These are things that were set up to create a middle class.
Exactly. And here's the thing on that. All of those issues affect Republicans in the same way that they affect Democrats and independents. And I think what especially the House leadership, maybe not so much in the Senate, but especially the House leadership is overlooking, is that there are Republican representatives from California and New York and New Jersey and Illinois, all of which are blue states, but which have some Republican representation in the House of Representatives. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be hearing from some of their middle to upper class voters who don't want to see those deductions go away.
Yeah.
And so I think Paul Ryan might be miscalculating a little bit,
yeah,
on how far he can move that without getting rid of some of that.
Right.
So we'll see. I don't know.
And let's see if anybody wants to join us. Phone number if you want to join us. This is Chuck Rogers and Eric Kirk talking about the national politics and the political state of affairs. Phone number is 826-4805 or 800-640-5911. That's 826-4805 or 800-640-5911. This is about the right time to call. I tend to get a bunch of them jammed at the last 10 minutes, and we can't get everybody in. And all of a sudden, people start wanting to think. So if you've got something you want to say or ask or talk about, this is the time.
Something that's, you know, to get things back to California here, one of the most interesting things I've been watching over the last, say, 3 weeks, maybe a month, is how active our Senator Kamala Harris has been.
Oh, yeah.
She's been delivering speeches that are not only good, but thoughtful, logical, and to great reception all over the place.
And she did a great cross-examination a couple times.
Oh, in some of the hearings. Yeah, yeah. She's devastating. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that, you know, unless I'm really missing something here, I think we're looking at her setting herself up to be either a presidential candidate or a vice presidential candidate, in 2020. And, you know, generally you think, well, you know, this is her first term in the Senate. But remember, it was Barack Obama's first.
We got Obama. We got Trump. Nobody's
absolutely
experienced this.
Trump's never even been in public office before.
Yeah.
So that's kind of out the window now. So right. And I think she would be a terrific candidate nationwide.
Yeah.
And I hope she does run. But I think what we're going to see, though, on the Democratic side is a huge slate of people in the beginning.
Oh, I think so. There will be, too. I think, well, if Sherrod Brown does well in 2018, yep, I'm sure we'll see him because he's got Ohio.
Yep.
You know,
he has Ohio.
and that's a big one. Republicans have not won without, mm-hmm, Ohio
that's
in a
right
long, long time. You've got.
I think Trump's going to get a primary challenge too.
I think so too.
Which
people
is,
are saying no, but I think
no.
Will get one.
I think he's absolutely going to get a challenge.
Yeah.
And remember, it was a challenge to a sitting president in 1980 when Ted Kennedy challenged Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
That some people say cost Carter the election to Reagan.
Right.
So, you know, if Trump gets a primary challenge, that could be the end of Trump.
Well, it could be, and he would probably might get somebody from the right and left.
He very well could.
Or not left.
Well, and some people think that that's why some of these Republicans are choosing not to run for re-election now, so that they can separate themselves from having to support any, from having to cast any more pro-Trump votes that would be on their record, like Bob Corker, for example, in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Some people are saying that he's going to challenge. We don't know. But
Corker is one. Of course, there's always Lindsey Graham, but he didn't do really well last time.
Yeah.
There's always McCain, but probably not.
No.
Not with his health issues.
Jeff Flake.
Jeff Flake is a possibility. He's not running, right?
That's right.
He's stepping out.
And he gave a terrific speech on the floor of the Senate explaining why.
Yeah.
And called out Trump.
I also wonder if maybe Susan Collins or Barbara Mikulski in Alaska.
In Alaska? Yeah. Either one.
I don't know. It does seem like there are some possibilities there. Ted Cruz will probably step up.
Yeah, Ted Cruz. Some people are even saying Mitt Romney may make another run at it.
Yeah.
I don't think that he would win, but the point
think so
is
either. They
is
need that, a fresh face.
I think they do too, but the point being that the more challenges Trump has to deal with in a primary, the more money he has to spend in that primary, and the more negative advertising that people will be seeing about him in the primary, and that only helps the Democrat. That's advertising the Democrats don't have to buy.
All right, let's take a call from Sandy. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I've been wondering over the years that as on the right, the more left we go, and all the way over to Green, you had that on earlier, is the whiter we become. And I'm wondering what you think about that and what we may be able to do about it, because I think the more left we go, the more we help old people.
That's an interesting point. One of the criticisms of the Green Party has been is that it is actually it tends to be educated, privileged people who vote for it, lower than the Democrats by far, and sometimes even lower than the Republicans in terms of people of color. I mean, when Peter Camejo ran in 2002. I think that was a record of Green voters was 7% or something.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So it is. They say that the left is one of the most segregated institutions in the country, more segregated than churches and others. So there is something to that. On the other hand, there's a long history. It depends on what you define as the left. The labor movement was very diverse from the beginning. That represents the left. Obviously, the civil rights movement, even the anti-war movement towards the end of it, certainly was very diverse. And take a look, if you can go watch Rachel Maddow's piece on the Virginia elections from last night, I think it was. Watch the first 20 minutes of her show. The diversity of what was hit here. And these were not people running centrist things. These were leftists running in conservative districts and winning, pulling it out. I think that that there's a certain truth to it, that, you know, farther left you go, the whiter it gets. But I think when you're talking, if you're talking third party, if you're talking left within the framework of what Michael Harrington used to call the possible something, the left wing of the possible or something like that, the diversity is there. And,
What about locally? Go down into the Arcata City Hall meetings. I admit that is not a left wing prop. It's not a green problem, but it is in fact a local problem that does involve very liberal types of politics.
Yeah. Well, Arcata is also the fifth district, and Arcata is probably more higher proportion white than others, although that's changing as the campus has been changing, I think. But a lot of students can't afford to rent in Arcata anymore. They're renting in Eureka. So I think there's a lot of problems there, but I don't think you can blame it as a left thing. I think it's just the demographics of Arcata. But I hear you. And there's also demographics of people who get involved. A lot of it has to do with class, and a lot of it has to do with race. And, boy, we can do shows on this and write books on it. Yeah. And got to crack that code for the rest. Bernie Sanders had a hard time getting the black vote and the Latino vote. Seemed to do really well with Asians and with Native Americans. But
Clinton got most of the African
American
vote.
American vote, particularly in the South. It was like a buzzsaw when they got to Super Tuesday, and he just couldn't do it. I think part of it was they were Southern, older African Americans who were just saying, I want to vote for the person who can beat the Republican. At that time, we didn't know who it was going to be.
Yeah.
Well, I would say, as far as Bernie Sanders goes, that's in my group. I'm a senior citizen, 76. And I was all set to go for Bernie Sanders. And if you remember, in Nevada, there was a caucus, and it was being in the afternoon run by women. A bunch of Sanders fellows came through and made a trash of it.
Yeah, there
was. And Sanders said, made some really weak apology. I voted for Hillary, and I never looked at Sanders again and won't.
Oh, there you go. That is one example. There were a few things that happened there in Nevada. He did come down on the Bernie Bros online, though. He did say, we don't want that crap.
Yeah, don't be, but it was light and didn't last.
Well, I know. We don't want that crap in our campaign. It's pretty strong.
No,
but
especially given today's problems with, as you obviously everyone knows, with the women coming forward. I think the left has got as far to go as almost the right as far as getting anyone...
Well, there's certainly some left-wing figures getting caught up in the Me Too backlash, which hopefully, you know, might lead to some kind of change here. It looks like a Republican politician in Alabama.
I was just going to say, of all places, it looks like possibly, and boy, this is optimistic, that maybe a Democrat could actually win in the state of Alabama.
Yeah, well, you're sleeping with 14-year-olds or trying to sleep with 14-year-olds.
The Republican.
Is usually unpopular, although there's just some, for some voters, they can just do anything. And there was even one politician today saying, well, you know, he was 30 years old and he was dating teenagers. And it's like, what? You know, like that's a normal thing. It's like, yeah, maybe you were.
Well, and this is also, let's remember. Go ahead.
Alabama, of course, it's normal.
Let's also remember that the person we're talking about was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the state of Alabama and defied the U.S. Supreme Court. He was thrown off the bench. In his primary victory speech, he pulled a gun out of his pocket up on stage.
I'm not necessarily endorsing his opponent.
No,
I'm just saying he's a nut. Right?
You're pointing out the facts is what you're doing. But you're not registered to vote in Alabama.
That's true. Listen, Sandy, it looks like I think we've got some callers behind you. We want to give them a chance as we're getting to the top of the hour here. But thank you very much for your thoughtful call.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. Michael, we have another caller? Oh, okay. We got a minute. We'll take that. Well, Alabama, that would be huge because that's probably about the reddest state in the country.
Well, that and Utah and Mississippi. But Oklahoma, maybe.
Right, but it's not like Georgia is being sort of threatened its redness because of the growing Atlanta area, which is more and more blue.
From Atlanta to Athens.
Right, but Alabama doesn't have a urban area like
that. Maybe. This is my old Southern thing coming out now. The city of Birmingham. Actually, interestingly enough, the city of Birmingham, which is the largest city there, does not go all the way back to the Civil War. So the culture within the city of Birmingham is not the old South culture. And after the 80s, when it used to be a steel town, after the 80s, when places like Pittsburgh and Youngstown and places like that took a hit in the steel industry, so did Birmingham. And it has rebuilt itself. And it went out and it recruited businesses and people from other parts of the country. So,
but the Atlanta metropolitan area, that's
much
like
bigger,
a fourth
much
of the
bigger
population there. I don't think Birmingham is quite that.
No, it isn't. But Alabama's not as populated as Georgia is either.
True.
So I think that there's a chance. Birmingham and Montgomery, where the Southern Poverty Law Center is headquartered also, is, you know, somewhat moderate. So, you know, if a Democrat really ran a good race against somebody like Roy Moore with the problems he now has,
right,
and carried Birmingham and Montgomery by, you know, huge margins, it's possible.
It's possible.
I'm being optimistic, I know, because we're talking about Alabama, but it's possible. I would love to see that.
All right.
I would love to see that.
Let's take John in Arcata.
Hi. When looking at why Hillary lost, I think there were three reasons. The first two we can't really do about. One is that the Democrats, like the Republicans, have done nothing for the Rust Belt people who put all their savings into their house.
That was huge.
And then lost it. The second is that there have been 30 years of Fox News poisoning the press against Hillary Clinton.
20 years.
So they needed a fresh face. But the third one, I think we can do something about.
What's that?
And that is in the Goldman Sachs speech that came out on the internet. She lost a lot of support by her theoretical support of free speech. And I'm sorry, free trade.
Okay.
And
yeah,
free trade, the Clinton style, is really good, perhaps, at maximizing the national productivity, the gross national product. But where it fails, I believe, is in raising the modal income in the United States. And that's something that we can switch and emphasize, that we don't care about whether millionaires are making more money. We care whether about the modal or average income is raised.
Yeah.
And I think if the Democratic Party would switch focus in that direction, that they could do a lot better.
Yeah. There was a
totally
time
agree.
When even industrialists like Henry Ford, it was kind of a nutcase, but he at least understood one thing, is that you need a middle class, you need people who can actually buy your durable goods, you know, and if you don't have people earning enough money to buy them, you can't sell them. And apparently they don't care because they can sell it in other markets now, and, you know, it's just, but
anyway. It's a good point, very good point.
Yeah. Well, thank you, John. All right. Did we have another caller, Michael, or are we done? Okay. So why don't we got a few minutes to kind of close this out. I mean, yeah, we do have that structural problem, and, you know, we could talk about why Clinton lost. We've been had a few shows about that, but I want to know how people are going to win. And I think that they did find a model that is actually sending ripples down there. I mean, here we got a chance in Alabama. We assume it's all red, but there are a lot of voters that don't normally come out, and I don't even know the name of the Democrat. Do you? I don't either. But I read he's running a pretty smart campaign. He's not going to the center and being milquetoast.
No.
He's actually taking a few key Democratic positions, principal positions.
Well, and one thing to watch for there is this. After the revelations about Roy Moore, and we don't know how that's going to play out.
We don't know. Could it be?
But if he stays in the race with this baggage that he now has, that's not going to be resolved in the next couple of days.
Yeah.
But if he stays in the race, he's being asked to withdraw, but he said no. If he stays in the race, it's going to be interesting to see whether we see Democratic money pouring in to that Democratic candidate in Alabama. Typically, a Democrat running in a place like that would not get a whole lot of help because the chances are so low of winning. But now, given what's going on there, if we see a lot of help coming to the fore there, that may be an indication of some internal polling that is good.
That is good. And that would be a huge.
That would be earth-shaking.
That would, yeah.
In
I
the
mean,
South.
That would be, there would be freakouts.
Yes.
At that point. And that would
in
be.
In a good way.
And there's no way that they could escape the idea that maybe this is a lodestone from Trump.
And that it's doable.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as Trump keeps tweeting, then there is a chance.
He was hedging his bets on this race a few days before he
backed Luther
up.
Strange.
Right.
Yeah,
did it, but he was like, "Well, okay, if he doesn't win,
maybe I backed the wrong guy. Yeah. I don't know. Roy Moore's fine, and let's talk about your Confederate monuments."
All right, we're getting down to 1 minute here, Chuck Rogers. We're obviously going to have you on again.
Look forward to it.
I love it bringing you here. Any final thoughts for this before?
Yes, keep the momentum going for another year into 2018. That's what we need. And people who have thought about running for office and who are progressive but have just said, "I don't even want to get into it," now is the time.
All right.
And it starts locally.
You've been listening to Thursday Night Talk. Thank you, Michael, for doing a great job engineering. Thank you, callers. Had some really thoughtful calls. And we will talk to you next time.
This has been Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Thanks to Eric Kirk and Chuck Rogers for hosting, and to Jill Stein for dropping by over the phone to be our guest. We love to get feedback on our programs. Please email thursdaynighttalk@khsu.org. Like our Facebook page, Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Coming up next week on Thursday Night Talk, it's The Race Beat with Lorna Bryant. Thanks to KHSU Thursday Night Talk producer Geraldine Goldberg. Our theme music is composed and performed by Jeff Kreider. My name is Michael. I've been your studio engineer tonight. Stay tuned to KHSU. It's 8 o'clock, and No Room for Squares is coming up next.
Tune in to the KHSU magazine.